She is. Hi, Sophie.
Good. We are all here. I am going to start the meeting, and I'll start by reading the usual public notice that precedes all public meetings now, all governmental meetings in California. Public advisory. Pursuant to Section 3 of Executive Order N-29-20, issued by Governor Newsom on March 17th, 2020, this July 7th, 2021 meeting of the Board of Library Trustees, excuse me, will be conducted exclusively through teleconference and Zoom video conference. Please be advised that pursuant to the executive order and the shelter in place order, and to ensure the health and safety of the public by limiting human contact that could spread the COVID-19 virus, there will not be a physical meeting location available. All right, you can join by phone. And if you are joining by phone and want to speak at any time, you press *9 and wait to be recognized. You can submit an email comment to bolt@cityofberkeley.info. Please be mindful that the teleconference will be recorded, as any Board of Library Trustees meeting is recorded. We are being recorded now. And all other rules of procedure and decorum will apply for Board of Library Trustees meetings conducted by teleconference or video conference. This meeting will also be conducted in accordance with the Brown Act, Government Code Section 54953. Any member of the public may attend this meeting. And questions regarding this matter may be addressed to E. Franklin, Administrative Secretary, 510-981-6102. The Board of Library Trustees may take action related to any subject listed on this agenda. So, welcome all. Let's see, I want to just check. Attendees, welcome board members, Eve, Tess, Danielle, Amy Reeder is here, Amanda Myers. Okay, hi all, welcome. So Eve, roll call when you're ready.
Okay, John Soloski.
Present.
Amy Roth.
Here.
Diane Davenport.
Here.
And Sophie Hahn.
Present.
Thank you.
We move to public comment on non-agenda matters. Okay, so anything that's not on tonight's agenda is now open for public comment. And I'll wait a second. We actually only have one member in as an attendee. So I think I can move on. I can safely move on. Comments from the library unions. I don't see anybody representing the union, so we can move on. Comments from Board of Library Trustees. So I'll just go down the row that I see. Amy?
I'm not sure if this is the proper place to make this comment, so you can stop me if you have to, but I just wanted to say to any of the candidates who might be listening or watching, that this was extremely difficult to make a choice. And that's really all I wanted to say. There was such well prepared and well-qualified candidates that it was very, very difficult for me to make any kind of choice. So thank you all for applying.
Thank you, Amy. Diane?
I'd just like to acknowledge the death of Regina Manoudry, who's a former library director. Regina died on the 18th of June, and she was our director beginning in 1977. And she's known for many programs that Berkeley is still known for. She started the Tool Lending Library, the Berkeley Information Network, the Berkeley Reads program. One of the things I'd forgotten about is that she actually encouraged the library union to get organized and be a partner in the administration of the library as well. While she was doing all of that, she was also the California Library Association president and ALA president, and was teaching at both library schools. Probably Gina is most known for thinking of the Library Relief Act, which was the first tax that was made with the public to pay for libraries only. So it literally saved libraries' lives after Jarvis Gann. And many, many public libraries are well-funded today because of that act. So we have her to thank for many things. And the fact that we are a thriving, well-known public library is due to many, many people, but certainly to Gina as well.
Thank you, Diane. That was a nice tribute. Thanks. Sophie.
Well, I will just add my gratitude and acknowledgement as well of Gina Manoudry's passing. We did close the last council meeting in her honor, and I had the honor of reading from her biography to share with the whole council and the public who were assembled at that time. And we are really standing on her shoulders. So I send my condolences to her wife and her friends and family and all who knew her. It's a big loss.
Thank you, Sophie. So I have nothing really novel to add, but I want to echo what Amy started out saying about this pool of candidates was extremely strong. And initially I was kind of fretting about it and pulling out my hair. See, my hair is shorter. Have you noticed? And then I took a deep breath and I realized, well, there's really, 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 really good candidates. And in many ways, we can't really lose here. We just have to make a choice. And having said that, I want to thank all the candidates for the time and effort you put into this. It was an extremely, extremely strong pool of candidates. And it does, I think, speak well for the library, for the system itself, for the organization. I think people recognize the excellence that we're striving for and that we've moved incrementally toward. You're never there, but you move toward it and you make improvements. And I think people recognize that and they want to be part of that. And that's exciting to me because I'm part of it, and it is exciting to me. And no matter what happens, who's chosen, I do want to thank all of you, really, sincerely, for the effort you put in. Okay. In
turn the page to the agenda and we move to the consent calendar. We have minutes from May 26th, minutes from June 14th, minutes from June 21st. We have fiscal year 2022 purchase authorization. And we have a contract amendment for Sentry Alarm Systems. Does anybody have any need to remove any of those for discussion? And I'll wait a second. And if nobody does, then I will entertain a motion to accept the consent calendar as is.
I'll move that.
Thank you, Diane. Is there a second?
Sure, I'll second.
Thank you, Amy. All right, no debate, no discussion on that. Eve, we need a roll call vote.
Hey, John Soloski?
Yes.
Amy Roth?
Yes.
Diane Davenport?
Yes.
And Sophie Hahn?
Yes.
All right, thank you. We move to our third agenda item, which is the action calendar. Recommendation, we did the trustee interviews and recommendation to City Council on appointment of trustee to serve a 4-year term, commencing September 15th, 2021, to fill the vacancy left by the end of Judy Hunt's first term. Going to give a shout out to Judy Hunt, and thank her for her service on this board. All right. So we will discuss, and then we need to adopt a resolution naming the recommended candidate to the City Council for appointment. And I think this was made clear to our candidates, but City Council has the final say. We send on a recommendation. It is their final say to approve or not. So I'm going to ask what we agreed upon was to come back to this meeting with a list of from 3 to 5 of our top candidates. And that's how we're going to proceed unless I hear otherwise. And I will say that I don't mind getting started, but I have chosen 6 to complicate things. As Amy said, it was not an easy choice.
Not really, not.
I mean, I could have flipped a coin for, you know, a number of people. But if John, you want me to get started, I can do that. Or if somebody else, I am not tied to that in any way.
John, can we first go through and just have each person name the people that they're interested in so that we can see, you know, from the get-go if there's some
overlap,
unanimity on this, begin discussing them in alphabetical order or something?
What I was suggesting, and that I would start unless somebody else wants to start.
I'd be happy to start, but you know, you could go right ahead, John.
I can go right ahead. Okay. All right. I'm just going to name the names at this point without any editorializing or, okay?
Yeah.
And I would say, this is not necessarily in exact order, but it's kind of in some kind of, it's loosely ranked, if you will. And I would say some of them are quite close and tied. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt. But here are my six names. Raquel Pinderuse. Dana Alshire. Mary Gilg.
I'm sorry, who, what was the, that, John?
Mary Gilg. Gil, Joseph Torin, and Beverly Green. And that's five, and I'm going to add Becca Todd to as my sixth. Okay, everybody got that?
Yeah.
Understood? Anybody else want to go?
Sure.
Go ahead, Diane.
I'll be the opposite of you, John. I'm going to name two people only for me.
Wow.
Because they stood out ahead of the others for me, is all. Beverly Green is on my list. And Fazlet Nasiri is on my list.
All right, I just muted myself, so I have to. Okay. Does anybody else want to take a turn? And I will note that Beverly Green was on both our lists.
Well, I'm happy to jump in.
Please.
I also... Myself, there's a strong number one. For me, standing out quite a bit ahead of the other wonderful, many qualified and wonderful applicants that we've had, and that is Beverly Green. I would be happy to elaborate as to why, for me, she stands out far above the other candidates. I think her background at AC Transit, her very, very deep and ongoing, lifelong participation in lifting up.
Sophie, wait. We really decided we weren't going to discuss or editorialize at this point.
Name people
and then
let
Amy finish up.
Okay.
And then we'll have time for that.
So my number one person is on both of your lists, so I don't know if it's even worth going beyond that.
Well, yes, it is actually.
Okay, so Beverly Green is number one for me. Also on my list is Mary Gilg and Kathy Kaczynski.
Okay, thank you. So, all right, just making notes here, keeping track of who's got who. Okay, and now Amy.
Okay, I just want to say I do have a kind of a lengthy list, but it's more as a tool for myself. I will read the first four, but then there are others who I would find completely acceptable who are kind of on the other half of the list. But anyway, that being said, I would say my number one was Sanka Kapura. Number two is Becca Todd. Number three is Vivian Pisano. And number four is Raquel Pinderuse.
Can you give me your first two again?
Sure, Sanka Kapura and mm-hmm. Becca Todd.
Oh no, okay. I heard Raquel, I heard now Sanka. Who else?
Vivian Pisano.
Oh yes, thank you. Okay.
Beverly Green is on the my reserve list, if for lack of a better term.
Okay. I'm I don't necessarily have to take a turn now, But if anybody feels like now's the time to start discussing or see if there's consensus, if somebody wants to put a name or two out, and then we start with that.
John, Beverly Green had three people.
At least sort of, three, and Amy.
Yeah, let's. Why don't we each kind just of on her short give list. A reason or two that she stood out for us?
Go ahead, please.
She stood out for me because the breadth of her experience, both, you know, the fact that she'd worked as a young person at Berkeley Public Library, that certainly helped for me. But in the small press distribution and in the big job that she has now with Alameda Contra Costa. So her experience both in life and in libraries seemed broad to me. In terms of her commitment to equity and diversity, she listed many things that she was doing at work and had done, and they included everything work-wise from sort of organizational management stuff to local staff level diversity work. I thought that she would be an interesting fit for us because her background in transit is different than ours and would bring us some new experience. And I really liked how she talked about libraries as being like transit services, a lifeline sort of service. And I appreciated that view of the libraries.
Thank you, Diane. Sophie, you now's your chance.
Okay. Well, I'm going to echo a lot of what Diane said. I just really feel like for every single criteria that we have, I felt that she excels in very substantial and substantive ways, not just saying this is what I believe in, or I've done this once or twice in my life, but actually a substantial demonstrated through work and in her and the organizations that she has worked with, really the full breadth, but with a lot of depth as well. I think it's easy to say that you have a commitment to things, and we all have commitments to things, but when you see a record of essentially an entire career that reflects a full commitment and experience to everything that we're looking for, it just, for me, is just a very weighty and substantial demonstration of what we're looking for. And, you know, we have a number of lists and things, but one of our main qualifications is a demonstrated commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion. When you look at what she's been involved with, task forces, groups that she's founded herself, a scholarship committee, national board director on the Conference of Minority Transportation Officials, vice chair of state legislative committee, these demonstrate more than just saying I'm committed to these things. These demonstrate a lifetime, not just of commitment, but of actual action. So, you know, that is a very important quality that we've been looking for. Another was executive leadership, business, financial management, and administrative skills. And once again, I see just this incredible, you know, everybody who applied had some of these things, but the, you know, an MBA, a fellowship, having been involved with huge budgets, working with a major public agency that actually serves a similar diversity of the community as a library serves, and really understands the importance of that service. You know, experience with parcel tax, with hiring, marketing, communications. I mean, there's no aspect of the work that we do where I don't see her having superior executive leadership, business, financial management, and administrative skills. The next is leadership experience in community-based not-for-profit or government agencies. Again, it's not just one or two things. It's so many things, demonstrating really a lifetime of experience. And then the last is strong public library advocacy, passion about lifelong learning and community engagement. And again, I just see a body of work and experience that is in its breadth and depth is unparalleled. So for those reasons, I really feel that she stands out. Even among the incredibly qualified people that we have, I think she really stands out among them.
Thank you, Sophie. Amy.
Yeah. No, we had such a wealth of choices, many of whom who could have served well and functioned well. Beverly Green was on my list. I would have no difficulty in recommending her to the city council.
Thank you.
Sure.
And it's now my turn. And I would agree. I was very impressed by Beverly's experience and the body of work that proves her commitment to equity and diversity. And I did find it very, very strong and compatible that she works for a public agency with much the same customer base, clientele, however you want to phrase that, users that our public libraries do. And so she's cognizant of that. She's worked with that. She's more than aware of that. And she's not going to need, the way I see it, there were several people that I think could have hit the floor running, basically. And Beverly is one of them. I'm absolutely happy and thrilled to name her and move her on, if that's the will of the board, because I think she would be a great choice. Not to trivialize or minimize any other candidate, by the way, because like I said, I had five or six people that I was more than comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Beverly would be a great choice. So if everybody's comfortable with that, the next step is just to make a motion toward a resolution towards sending this to council.
I have my hand raised to do that.
Please go, Sophie.
I move that we recommend Beverly Green to the city council for appointment to the Board of Library Trustees.
I second that motion.
Okay, so I'm going to check in with Tess and Eve. Do we need anything further, or is that adequate?
Just to clarify, John, when you say anything further, do you mean, for example, a signed resolution?
Well,
is that the
resolution will come for me to sign, I assume?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so that's all we need to do to move this on. Fine. There's a motion. There's a motion. There's a second. Let's do the roll call. Thank you.
John Solosky.
Did you call me?
Yes.
I couldn't hear. Yes.
We can't hear you, Eve.
Is this better?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. John Solosky.
Yes.
Amy Roth.
Yes.
Diane Davenport.
Yes.
And Sophie Hahn.
Yes.
And Sophie, you still have your hand up. Was that from last
time? That was up previously.
Right, no problem. No problem.
All right, thank you all. And Beverly, congratulations. And I again, and congratulations to all the candidates. It was a really, really strong pool. Thank you all.
I haven't personally thanked everybody for applying, but I really would like to too. I think we just had an amazing field of very committed people, and I really hope that we can find ways to get more of the public involved in the work that we do. I mean, we are going to be doing a strategic plan. That's a way to call people in. You know, we've got work to do where we can use these people who really care about what we're doing. So they'll stay on my list, that's for sure.
I see your hand, Sophie.
Yeah, Diane, I did put that back up.
In my experience on boards and et cetera, there's always work to do.
Yeah,
I've never slacked off on anything I've been on. but thank you. And Sophie, hand?
Yes, sorry, I did put it back up because I also didn't have the opportunity. And I really want to say that I am completely bowled over, absolutely delighted and so honored that so many incredible people want to support and serve our public libraries. And I mean, I haven't been at this forever, but I have never seen, honestly, never seen more than a few candidates, period. But even when we've had several, I've never seen such a flood of truly exceptionally qualified candidates. And, you know, Amy, when you said you have like a fairly long list, I mean, I could have recommended literally 20, you know, and even those who I might not have recommended, I might have recommended if we had a different pool. So
right.
There was not one person whose passion for the library and whose background would not recommend them to this board.
That's right.
And we really are in a situation where we've been able to take a group of exceptional people, and somehow we've had to pull one person who, you know, it's like the Olympics or something where everybody is extraordinary, but still there's one person that's the winner, right? So I want to thank the library staff. I want to thank our library director, and I want to thank my colleagues, because we would not be attracting a pool like this if it were not for the excellence and the amazing service that our library provides to the community. So I really think a lot of credit goes to our library staff and administration. There's a reason why everybody wants to be associated with our library. Last but not least, I want to remind the many incredible people who have stepped up that not only will there be opportunities to participate in things like strategic planning, but we also have two incredible auxiliary boards and organizations that support our libraries. We have the Public Library Foundation, and we have the Friends. And those are also both excellent ways to support our libraries, either through the book sales and the other work that's done by the Friends, which is very hands-on and in the library and a great way to build community. And also through the foundation that is pretty singularly focused on fundraising in kind of the more traditional sense, but also has been instrumental, both of these organizations, in funding innovative, new, cutting edge programs, as well as facilities for the library. So we have a very active library community, and I just invite everyone to explore all the opportunities that exist to remain engaged. So thank you very much. Appreciate the time to make those comments and express my gratitude.
Thank you, Sophie. Thank you for the comments. Unless somebody else has something to add at this point, we can move to Tess and the director's monthly report.
Thank you very much, John. And I certainly don't want to speak for Beverly, but I did want to mention to everyone that she's just added a comment in the chat that everyone might want to read. And I'm excited by this and feeling very hopeful. So I appreciate everybody's time and commitment to the process, as I know that the number of fantastic candidates also involved commitment on all of your part as well. So thank you again for your support of the process. I would like to move on to the director's report. I just wanted to mention again, as a very minor detail with respect to the process, that the intent is for us to submit the signed resolution of this recommendation so that it would be included in the September 14th City Council meeting agenda. And this requires the submission of this signed written report by 12 p.m. on August 12th. So I just wanted to explicitly review the timeline and make sure that everyone knew what to anticipate with respect to that. And moving into the director's report, there is a lot of information to communicate. I do want to thank the feedback that I received from one of you, at least, that it would be helpful to hear a more specific update on where we are in terms of our recruitment efforts and our vacancy rates. And I think that is a very important subset of information that a lot of people are interested in. And so I thank you for the opportunity to do a little bit more of a deep dive on this topic. So the last time that we had a more in-depth report on recruitment was in November 2020. And I think that we will likely be preparing another more specific or elaborate report for a future board meeting, just so that we can go into the same level of detail. And then we've been providing updates on recruitment since February 2021 in each of the board packets as well. And so just to recap, because it's been a long and complicated year for all of us, during the last quarter of 2019 and into the first quarter of 2020, the library successfully recruited for 17 different positions across the library system. And I'd like to pause here and acknowledge Danielle McMillan, our associate HR analyst, and she's in the call, and I just want to acknowledge her work on this because she is one individual supporting all HR functions for the library. And while she does collaborate with HR, city HR staff and some of this work, she's responsible for carrying forward most of these different areas, so including everything from personnel issues and support to managers to recruitment, as well as managing all of our leaves, which, as you all know, need to be very carefully managed and documented. So I just wanted to acknowledge Danielle's efforts. And she was with the library at the time that this first wave of recruitments happened. But of course, the acting library director at that time was Elliot. And of course, we know what happened after that first wave of recruitments. There had been a plan to continue to fill positions because, of course, there were still a number of vacancies that remained at that time, in part because a lot of those positions were filled through internal promotion, which I think is really important in terms of career ladders for staff. But it just meant that the vacancy shifted to a different part of the org chart, basically. And then, of course, we had the pandemic begin and the subsequent citywide hiring freeze. We did fill two positions as we began hiring again, and that was the Accounting Office Specialist 3, as well as the position that Amanda Myers is currently filled, the Library Services Manager position that is overseeing branches. And we're very close to completing a recruitment for 10 library aid positions, and eventually it will actually be 11. Now that we've moved into the new fiscal year, we can actually recruit for an additional position. And these positions will be reporting across the library system, so to each of the branches and the central library. The only thing that we are waiting for with respect to these positions is background checks. So of course we're learning about how backlogs and systems are impacting all sorts of agencies, including the Department of Justice. And so we are basically just waiting for confirmation that all these folks have passed their background checks, and then we'll be able to make them permanent offers of, or regular offers of employment, and provide them with start dates and assignments. So it's very exciting. We've already initiated the recruitment for the supervising librarian position. And this and another recruitment for the supervising library assistant position are both very important because the library has a contractual obligation under our MOU with our unions to ensure that positions are filled permanently that are currently filled by people who are temporarily working in a higher classification. And so we need to prioritize these positions because, again, there were people that successfully were able to take on temporary positions, and they've then vacated their positions, and we need to fill these current positions permanently. So it does represent a lot of recruitment for us to continue to complete. We will also need to initiate recruitment eventually for a fiscal administrative services manager position to fill Dennis's position. And then eventually we will be able to move on to a librarian recruitment for all specialty areas. So that includes children's, teen, and adult services. And I think that that's going to be extremely helpful because, as many of you are aware, we do have a fairly high number of librarian vacancies right now. And I think in terms of providing service to the community, especially in terms of outreach services and participating in the strategic planning process, it will be really important to have a broader range of staff filling those positions. So with respect to our vacancy rate, as Dennis reported when he provided the budget update in the previous fiscal year, our vacancy rate is around 31%. With 36 total vacancies at present. Five of these vacancies are for positions that were new to the organization, so that were authorized either in the last budget cycle or this budget cycle. Five new positions that have never existed before that are still waiting to be filled. So I just wanted to clarify that point. And when we complete the library aid recruitment, the vacancy rate for the library will be 22%. I just want to emphasize, I think, for everyone listening to the meeting, that the library is committed to a transparent, timely hiring process in all classifications. And this is something that we think is really critical to our ability to fulfill our mission to the public. And we're eager to fill these positions as quickly as possible, but it's very important that we don't compromise just in terms of making sure that we're bringing in the right people. And that includes making sure that we're continuing to pay attention to some key aspects in terms of recruiting for diversity in all levels of our organization and valuing the different experiences that various candidates can bring to our library system through their own diversity of experience. So I think sometimes it takes a little bit more time, effort, and outreach to do that. Sometimes it takes a national search instead of just recruiting locally. There are a lot of different strategies that we will need to employ to do this work. And I'm happy to be able to partner with Danielle on this because I think that she is very aware of the need to approach each recruitment in a nuanced way, depending on what classification it is, who we're trying to reach, basically how we need to engage with the community to find the best possible applicants. So I think I do have some more content that doesn't relate to recruitment, but I think it might help for me to pause and just ask whether anyone had questions that were specific to recruitment, vacancy rates, anything like that before I move on to the rest of the content.
Tess?
Go ahead.
I just want to say that I really appreciate the update and the thoroughness of it. And part of it for me is that I think it's very important for those of us on the board speaking to the public for us to be able to be as straightforward as you are and to say that, you know, part of our process of reopening has to consider the vacancies that we have and the need to do nationwide searches and whatnot at times. So it's just really helps me in terms of having the statistics to be supportive out in the community for what you're doing in-house. So thanks a lot for that. I appreciate it.
I don't see anybody else, Tess.
Thank you, Diane. I very much appreciate that. And I think that we all value transparency and, you know, we all want to make sure that we're providing factual information to the community about where things stand. And it's been interesting. There have been a lot of comments from the public that we've received throughout our reopening process. Some of them extremely supportive and, you know, very excited. And then other folks asking understandable questions about why the different service models, why the different hours. And, you know, we take as much time as possible to provide, you know, the level of detail that those questions really require, because I think it's important to engage with everyone in a respectful way about all of this. But we are excited about being able to recruit more staff. And I think that the staff is excited too. And I do want to emphasize a point that I've made in other reports, and that is, you know, one of the strategies that we've used over the past, I'd say at least 6 months, probably beginning in December, is that when we began to see that there were some critical staffing levels needed in order to provide services, we began to see whether there were staff that were part-time that wanted to work more hours. And what we began to see and understand is that there is actually a large number of part-time staff that was quite excited to be able to work full-time. And so what we did was we basically authorized an extremely high number of, we call them extra hours, but they're supplementary hours to basically backfill for some of the vacant positions. And I think that's really what's enabled us to be able to provide the service that we're providing. I think in the long run, that definitely speaks volumes to how we might need to consider our positions and restructure so that we continue to think about when we might need to convert part-time positions into full-time positions. Because again, I think that when you're talking about being competitive in the Bay Area, which is the land of public library systems, we really need to think about a living wage, what people are going to need to be able to live in the Bay Area. And I think a lot of the time that would involve a full-time position as opposed to a part-time position, because otherwise people are cobbling together positions. So forgive me for going into more detail on that point, but I think that that's something that we've seen through this experience. And I just, I want the staff to know that it's something that we believe will need to change over time. So we'll move into our discussion of where we are with the reopening process, because I think that there have been some really significant changes that have occurred since we last met. Of course, we're all aware of the changes that occurred in the state of California on June 15th, and that has created a lot of, let's just say, a lot to navigate with respect to businesses and agencies who are trying to understand what local masking requirements are. And we're very fortunate that we're guided by the City of Berkeley Public Health Officer, that we have that guidance at our local level, and that we have the City of Berkeley. But I think that there was a period of ambiguity that related to the state of California's Cal OSHA guidelines with respect to what was going to be required for workplaces in the state of California. And some of you might be aware, but there had basically been some temporary guidelines released. And then within a period of a couple of weeks, They completely changed. And so the link in your board packet is actually to the more updated standards that Cal OSHA has issued. But the reason why it's important is because the guidelines require basically managing folks who have been vaccinated differently than folks who have not been vaccinated. And so there is a masking requirement associated with people who attest to not having been vaccinated versus receiving the vaccine. And what this means is that for agencies and organizations to be in compliance with Cal OSHA, we actually are going to need the information about whether or not employees have been vaccinated, which was not something that the City of Berkeley was originally collecting. So this is something that shifted, and now the city has initiated an effort for people to confidentially attest to whether or not they've received the vaccine, or if they prefer, they don't actually need to declare one way or the other. But if somebody indicates that they would prefer not to share, they will be approached as someone who has not received the vaccine for the purposes of the Cal OSHA guidelines, if that makes sense. And the library is carefully considering how to implement the guidelines. One thing that's different for the library compared to some of the other city departments is that we are a youth congregant setting, which means that, of course, there's sometimes a large number of children that are present at the library indoors that have not, of course, had the opportunity to receive the vaccine if they are under 12. And this means that the California has different guidelines than it would for other types of settings. And of course, transportation is one of those settings where the masking requirements are different as well, healthcare. And so we are thinking about the fact that we are places or spaces where a lot of children congregate and needing to make a decision about how we're going to approach this moving forward. And that's something that we're engaging with all of our staff groups about. So again, the safety committee, the joint labor management team, our library council of supervisors and managers, and just making sure that we have a clear understanding of how people are thinking about this issue. Because I do think that it's a serious concern that children at this point are in libraries and cannot yet receive the vaccine. So I wanted to summarize for you that we're in the process of deliberating over how to manage that piece, but we are asking employees to respond to the survey and to provide the information about their vaccination status. Apart from the masking requirement, so whether or not you would potentially be asked to wear a mask at work, there's another whole issue around our infection protocols, right? So the way that we handle, basically, if we were to learn that a staff member were exposed to someone who had a confirmed case of COVID, the way that we have to handle that is different depending on whether or not the person has received the vaccine or not. And because of that difference, in the guidelines, it's important for us to have this information about employees' status with respect to vaccine. Obviously, it's private information. Only the person's direct supervisor would be informed. And the city is taking great measures to make sure they're collecting the information in a way that's safe and that is basically in a software product that's compliant in terms of privacy and all of those associated requirements. But it's complicated, and that's one of the things that we're working on right now. And so I wanted to provide that update. And then the last thing I just want to share is really exciting, and that is that we are now offering in a limited way some outdoor in-person programming. And I wanted to conclude my report on a more positive note, because I know that there is a lot of concern out there. And of course, we're navigating that too with respect to the potential implications of the Delta variant and whether or not that's going to require us to make some adjustments again. So I'm excited to be able to talk about in-person programming, because I think It just shines a ray of hope and helps us remember our mission in terms of what we do at the library. And we've certainly seen exponential rates of circulation during the pandemic. And I'm going to invite our colleague Bay, who manages our collection work, to come and provide you with some data around collection usage over the past year, just because I think it's very interesting. And of course, we had a lot of people attending our virtual programs, which continue. But I really wanted to call out the leadership of one of our systems librarians, Michael Quende, who works at the Claremont branch, a beloved librarian, children's librarian there. And he has really taken the lead in terms of outreach to some of our local Head Starts and child development centers. And he has done things like initiated outreach, musical outreach story times. And so he recently provided a program at West Berkeley YMCA Head Start. And he does this in concert with a couple of other staff that are musicians. So they have a musical act that they do in addition to the story time. And of course, because it's in a school setting, everyone is compliant with all the standards, everyone's wearing masks, but it was just so lovely to hear that he was able to be in the community again. And he's also providing these story times now in the park. So he's going to be doing a limited run of story times. One of them is tomorrow at the Bateman Mall Park. And he's going to be providing musical preschool story times outside. And we're really excited about that. We've also heard that children's librarian Josh Schlackman from Torrey Hall Pittman South, he has put together a wonderful art program, basically outdoor sketching, that will take place on the UC campus. And then there's also a bike maintenance workshop happening at Torrey Hall Pittman South, just in a couple of days, July 10th. And we saw that so far 76 people have registered for this program. And usually just about 15 people attend this program during sort of normal times. So it's just wonderful, first of all, that the staff are being creative and finding these ways to do in-person programming safely. And then also, I just think that the community is so excited to have everybody back and to be able to see their people in person, right? Their own personal librarian. So I couldn't be more thrilled at that. And I'll pause here and ask whether there are additional questions about anything that I've reported on.
I'll just say that I appreciate your very thorough and informative report. Really a lot of important information, very rich information for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are we done, Tess? Is that it?
Yes, I conclude my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that was very good report. Thank you. Very thorough. Covered a lot of ground too. Thanks. I'm going to ask, do we have an August meeting?
No.
Okay, we're off in August. Eve's happy about that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anything else for future agendas or anything else on anybody's mind? Go ahead, Diane.
I think it's time for us to put Tessa's evaluation back on the agenda. I think
we agree.
She came to us with a list of things that she wanted to do. And I think, you know, we're not quite on schedule, but we're closely on schedule. And to just get you and Amy to decide if we need to have some sort of closed session around that or what we need to do. And let's get it done so that we stay on some sort of schedule. Just we've agreed that it's so important to our support to have that be as timely as we can. So
I agree, Diane. Thank you. And it is important. It's
It's one of our tasks. And Tess, I think we were going to work off your work plan, correct? Is that right?
Yeah, that was something that we had discussed, was trying to make sure that even if there was a different document, or you took one of the templates that you felt
right
good examples,
right,
that there would be a way to incorporate the actual work plan content into it as well.
Right. Yeah. So Tess, you have your hand up?
Yes, I just wanted to honor the fact that Diane had requested several meetings ago an update on the Joint Labor Management Committee work, because she noted that it's actually a process that we use that I think is important and does guide a lot of decision-making at the library. And the reason why we were not engaging with that report more quickly was because we actually just
had a
changing of the guards. So there was an election a few months ago, and the whole group, well, there are some people who remained on the group, but a lot of people turned over, and we had some new people. And now that we've worked together for actually several months, and I must say we've had many more special meetings, because we need to come together to discuss all of these different changes that happen with reopening. And we'll have a special meeting where we talk about the masking requirements and things like that. I just wanted to say, Diane, that I think that it would be appropriate to put it back on the agenda, perhaps not at the September one, but maybe sometime in the fall, now that we've been able to work together a little bit longer. So I'll talk about that with that group.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can decide how to present that information to you. But I just wanted to make sure you knew that that was not lost. And I do think eventually it would be helpful to talk about some of the circulation data and patterns that we saw during the pandemic, just because it's quite interesting. You learn a lot about our community and our system. And I think that it would be helpful for you all to learn more about that as well. So that's just another suggestion that I had.
Great.
Good, very good, Tess. Thank you. Unless there's anything else, and do speak up if there is, I think we can entertain a motion to adjourn, yes?
I so move.
Second.
There's a motion and there's a second, and I want to thank you all. And again, I want to thank our candidates and congratulate Beverly.
Yes.
Eve, roll call.
John Soloski?
Yes.
Amy Roth?
Yes.
Diane Davenport?
Yes, good night.
And Sophie Hahn?
Yes, and thank you.
Thank you all. Good meeting.
Good work, everyone.
Take care.
Yep. Very productive. Thank you all. Take care. See you soon.